This is Paul Steinhauser with the latest edition of First District Profiles. I'm sitting here at the Wentworth in Newcastle with State Senator Andy Sanborn. Andy, why are you here today? What brings you over to the Seacoast today?
Paul, it's so great to see you. And look, I have an opportunity to come over today. I've been asked to talk about our states and our nation's energy policy and what are we doing to try to reduce the cost of energy in New Hampshire, what challenges are in front of us relative to our aging infrastructure, limited supply and capacity. And quite frankly, we still have a lot of real concern about what our fuel security is looking forward. So it's going to be a great discussion. Sit on a panel with a bunch of other people.
You are a Bedford man. That's where you come from. You're well known in the Bedford, Manchester area. You're well known in Concord. But for a lot of the Seacoast residents who may not know you so well and who maybe don't cover the state government so closely, tell us a little bit about you.
Sure, thanks. You know, I'm a fourth generation native. I've lived in this state my entire life. I come from a line of small business owners. My grandfather bought a small home heating oil company, worked at it and owned it for 45 years. My father followed him. I always wanted to be a business owner, but took a little deviation and spent some time over in the commercial and investment banking side, working for this little bank called Indian Head Bank that most people know. And then Laura and I had an opportunity, Laura, my wife, obviously, we had an opportunity and just felt it was our time. So we struck out on our own to live that small entrepreneurial spirit that makes New Hampshire what it is. And today we do several things, although we're probably most known that we own a little restaurant up on Main Street in Concord called The Draft, which is a state-recognized, award-winning restaurant that, although we love sports and that's kind of our thing, you know, it's all true home-cooked food, and we have a great time there.
Now, listen, I don't take sides in politics, but I will say.
You have to say.
The wings are pretty darn, some of the best wings in the state of New Hampshire right there.
I would tend to agree with that.
Now, besides the draft, what else, so what other kind of businesses do you and your wife own?
You know, so my wife are involved in commercial and a little bit of real estate development around the state. At one point before the political thing, we were machining parts for Harley-Davidson's and race cars. We had a little race car restoration shop. But since we've now gotten involved in politics, we don't have time for all of that. So, you know, today we focus on this political thing we're involved in and heading down to the draft to, watch the Patriots or the Red Sox or the Bruins or the Celtics play and make some good food and to manage our real estate.
This political thing, let's talk about that for a sec. You're one of the most conservative members of the state Senate, if not the most conservative. And your wife, Lori, twice now came very close to becoming the next speakers of the State House of Representatives. Do you guys live and breathe politics at home like you do at the State House?
You know, it's really funny, Paul, that we don't. You know, we did make a decision to become politically active, and people know that. And, you know, we both have been very clear about it. We never became politically active to be like all the other politicians. We became politically active to protect you from all the other politicians. We just felt there was a real void of people in the legislature that had a real basic understanding of how the business community works and what it's like to have to sign the front of a check versus the back of the check. And we just saw time and time again how traditionally, 20 years ago, government was a great partner to help people grow and succeed, and they were there in times of need, to kind of what's become today, that government has just become too big, too broad, too bold. It's invading every single aspect of our life. And at this point, I think it's really an impedance on people's freedom and liberty versus helping it in many cases.
Like I said, you're very well known in the Manchester Bedford area, in Concord, obviously, because of your state government service. Do you feel like you're at a little bit of a disadvantage? The other main Republican candidate in this race is from Dover.
Sure.
So I'm wondering, do you feel like you have to work a little bit harder here in the Seacoast region?
I mean, look, it's one of the things, you know, I'm a proven candidate, right? I've been on the ballot a few times. I have proven my ability to reach out to the voters and meet them and have that one-on-one conversation that's so important with the people of this state. And respectfully, I think I've been pretty effective at it because I seem to keep winning elections when I run. So there's something to be
said. That's a good barometer.
I think it's a good barometer.
Yeah.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, I'm just a hardworking blue-collar guy with scabs on my knees and dirt under my fingernails. I'm a business owner first and foremost. I love this state. I love the people of this state. And there needs to be some balance between all of these politicians that think government is the answer to every question they've ever had and guys like me that think, you know, I believe in our people. I believe in personal freedom and personal liberty. And that message has always been really successful. And we'll continue it in this race.
You know, you mentioned you've been very successful in your runs for state Senate. This is a bigger step. What was the, you know, what did it for you? What told you, yeah, I'm going to run for Congress? What was the real, the key here?
I mean, for me, I mean, so much of it is my, you know, A, I'm a guy that believes in term limits, Paul. So I knew when I entered the state Senate, there would be a certain period of time and then it would be time for me to go home. And frankly, I never thought I was going to run for Congress. You know, people have asked me, as you know, year in, year out, if I'd consider stepping up for higher office. But I really thought I was done. But after this election, like so many people in America, A, just so frustrated at the inability of Washington, D.C. to get anything done. B, I think they're just so incredibly out of touch with the challenges us everyday people face. So I made the decision that, look, you know, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to take away all of their little fancy perks, that they should have the same health care we have. They should stop flying first-class travel, got to get rid of all the fancy pensions. And frankly, they need to go back and work like the New Hampshire legislature works. You know, we introduce bills. We actually have public hearings. We actually vote on them. We're responsible to get our budget out every year to make sure it's balanced. You know, I've spent a lot of time cutting taxes in this state because I believe it's your money. And I've been very successful at cutting taxes and returning a little bit more of your money back to you. I mean, look, there's a role for government, and it's really there to help people that are in need. And I feel very strongly about that. But in this case, I think most people would agree that it's become a little bit too intrusive, a little bit too bold. And we need to find someone who can represent everyday people of New Hampshire and Washington, because I don't think we're getting that today. I mean, look, Congress is controlled by Republicans. U.S. Senate's controlled by Republicans. We have a Republican president. And we have four representatives for New Hampshire today in D.C., all from the same party. And some people would suggest that their views and efforts and actions these days tend to put them on a pretty extreme left side. So I'm here to provide that balance.
When it comes to your run for Congress, launched in June, so yes. you've been in this for quite some time.
Yep.
What kind of reaction are you getting from voters?
I'm amazed. I lots of candidates will be like, "Oh, it's awesome," blah blah blah. But it's been awesome. We are, you know that Lori and I are known to be ferocious campaigners, that I'm not doing this because I'm bored, and that I made that decision if I was going to run for office, I'll give it everything I have, like I had every single race that I've been successful in. And the turnout, the excitement, the number of people coming to us has frankly been beyond the high bars I set for myself. You know, we've almost 300 people that have endorsed at this point, you know, three times any other candidate. We've got more money in the bank than our other primary opponents have. We've built a great infrastructure. We have a great team. We're doing events almost every single night. The conversations have been great. I mean, look, you know, I know there's, you know, this shifting we've had in the political winds in D.C. in the past year. For the first time, we're actually seeing some things happen. We see tax reform and people are actually getting more money back in their pocket. The economy is truly doing very well. So people seem more energized to talk about the future of America today than I've seen them be in like 10 years. So it's been great conversations.
You mentioned your cash on hand, and campaign cash, especially in the early portions of a race, is important. It's an important barometer. Two of the top political handicappers, the nonpartisan Cook Report and the nonpartisan Inside Elections, just recently shifted their ratings on the first district from a clear toss-up to slightly favoring the Democrats. And they pointed to what they considered the lackluster fundraising from not just you, but also your other rival right now, Eddie Edwards, for the nomination. Are you concerned about the money?
No, I'm not. Look, you know, we'll have it when the time needs. We'll be there at the race, as I have always been. You know, as I just mentioned, you know, I've got, I think, twice the cash on hand that my opponent has today. And we have to recognize that in the ebb and flow of a campaign, you also need to stop and build the team. You need to do events. You need to hire, you know, companies that help with your outreach and your marketing. So, you know, it would be great if we could say, look, every day, 7 days a week, we have one focus, and that one focus is to make sure we have the resources to run the race. But we have to recognize there's a lot more to it. And, you know, some quarters are great and other quarters are not quite so good. And we obviously were focusing on some other things last quarter, but this quarter will be good.
Talking about focusing, one of the big focuses right now for a lot of Americans in the wake of that horrific shooting down in Florida is the possibility of tightening up gun laws. And we just heard President Trump just this week just talk about in a meeting with a bipartisan meeting with Congress. He talked about a couple things, First of all, he talked about raising the age of being able to buy those kind of AR-15s and other rifles from 18 to 21. He also talked about expanding background checks to include internet sales and gun show sales. And I'm wondering what you think of some of these ideas that now even the president is floating.
Look, I think the tragedies that happened in Parkland are horrific, right? I'm just like in Sandy Hook, just like in Columbine, just like at Fort Hood. Our society is not supposed to do this. We are not supposed to have these type of troubles. And everyone in America's heart breaks when these things happen. It's sad. And it should never happen. You know, there's been a lot of conversation about what do we do and how do we prevent this. And, you know, one of the things, Paul, that I've always said, and I've said for some time even in this political sphere that I've been in, is it constantly dumbfounds me that our society seems to be so wanting and desire to make sure we have an armed security guard at the bank, even though your cash or gold isn't even there, about the fact that you can't go into a store in any, you know, major area to buy a trinket without some security guard there or a lock on the door. And, you know, I was just down in New York City recently, and we've got SWAT members protecting street performers, but yet we're leaving our kids entirely exposed. And I think we need to have the discussion relative to, you know, should there be police personnel who carry a firearms, or should there be, you know, other people who are willing and wanting to defend themselves in public, like teachers or custodians or whoever it is, that people that have the training and the ability and the service to actually be there to defend our kids. And that seems to be a very contentious discussion, but it's a debate I think we need to have. In addition to that, you know, one of my frustrations has always been, we have laws on the books to buy guns, of what background checks we're supposed to have and how we're supposed to be sharing information. And New Hampshire specifically is a state that we know today is not following the laws that we have on the books today. So maybe we need to follow the laws we have.
So you'd probably advocate then for beefing up or strengthening existing laws rather than adding new ones?
I think we should always debate everything, right? I mean, this is part of what the American process is, and we should always have the debate. But, you know, I guess I look at this in addition to the challenges we have right now with laws as they relate to firearms. If we have laws on our books that we're willfully not following, we need to have that debate, be it firearms, be it taxation, be it regulation. Mm-hmm. And clearly, you know, when it comes to the mental health issue, right now our state has made a conscious decision not to utilize that in gun checks. And we should debate those types of things.
And you brought up the president's comments. You think it's a good idea or a bad idea to arm some teachers who have appropriate training?
You know, I think it's a debate we should have. And again, I refer back to what I just said, that I think our children are the single most precious resource that America has. And the fact that we continually leave them very, very vulnerable while we're protecting iPhones, I'm not sure that's something I agree with, right? Maybe we need to protect iPhones and diamonds at the jewelry store, but I believe we need to protect our kids. I mean, one thing that I'm very excited for is, you know, I think we spent about $20 million recently, and I think the number goes up to about 37, if I remember correctly, in our budget that I voted for and the governor's been implementing, this place where we recognize we need to what's called harden up our schools. We need to make sure that the access points are limited and people see where there are, that there are locks on the doors, that exit ramps going out or entrances from all other places in the school can be contained. So in this state, for our people in New Hampshire, the Republican Party put stuff in the budget. The governor is implementing it. So we are doing a lot of things to try and help.
State Senator Andy Sanborn, we appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Truly appreciate it. Thanks so much.